Episode 1657, My Strength is My Story with Heather Avis. Scoot over and make some room.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring
at a stop sign. Happy Happy Date is my favorite day of the week. It is My Strength is My Story series, and we have with us one incredible, extraordinary mama. It's a sriracha mama. It's Heather Avis, and you all are going to be touched by her story, but more importantly, by her heart. It's time to scoot over and make some room. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Heather's, welcome to our family. Come on the couch. We're so glad you're here. If you haven't already had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple strategy, everyday solutions to live, love, and impact. Well, Heather and I get down to business very quickly, but it's one of those girl-to-girl chats, one that you're just embracing each other. And I'm telling you, we're talking about some tough subjects when it comes to our children, when it comes to where they fit in and should they fit in. We all have differences, but are you willing to scoot over and make some room? So without further ado, let's welcome in to Create Your Now, Heather Avis. Scoot over and make some room. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited. It is my favorite day of the week. It is My Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an absolutely incredible, extraordinary mom, Heather Avis. Heather Avis is a wife of 17 years to Josh. Happy anniversary. They're just now celebrating that 17th year. And mom to their three beautiful children, Mason, Truly, and August. She's a popular speaker, podcaster of The Lucky Few, and Instagrammer. Heather's family story has been featured by numerous outlets, including Time, Today, Pop Sugar, Hour of Power, and most recently in a Disney World commercial. Heather is a two-time author. Her first book, The Lucky Few, and her brand new book, Scoot Over and Make Some Room, Creating a Space Where Everyone Belongs. Now it's time to get your comfies on and join us on the couch. It's the Me Too couch for us moms. Nothing like two sriracha mamas. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. I'm doing so good. Thanks for having me on. This is fun.
No, I cannot wait to share your story. Of course, you know, I was telling you earlier, I've read your book, and I just want to get your message out to the world. But before we jump there, I have to ask you, what brings you joy?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Being with the people I love. So sharing a meal, my dad always says, feet under the table. So when I've got like my best girlfriends, we've got a good, like a charcuterie and cheese board, some good wine, good conversation, that brings me so much joy.
Oh, I love that. Feet under the table. How cool is that? I think we all need to incorporate that into our weekly lives. I would say daily, but it's, you know, nowadays people are just kind of crazy busy. So man, feet under the table. I'm taking that one, Heather. I'm taking that one.
Do it.
Well, how did adoption become a part of your story?
So we tried to have kids naturally and couldn't, but still wanted to be parents. And so adoption made the most sense for us. That was our next best choice. So we're not like those saintly people who, you know, pursued it and are so holy. It was at the times our second choice in how we were going to become a family. And then after we adopted once, then it was our first choice for the next two. So we've adopted three times.
Wow. And so three different adoptions. And how old were they when you adopted them?
Our oldest daughter came home a little after 3 months old. Our middle daughter was almost 6 months old. And our son, we actually got to go to the hospital the day he was born. And he came home 2 days later.
Wow. So you got them, though, at a very, very young, impressionable age.
Yes. Yeah. All little babes. And all were from Southern California. They were all born in Southern California.
Aw. Well, I know there are a lot of women out there that struggle with infertility. Mm-hmm. And it's a very touchy subject. How did you personally begin to move from not being able to have children as a couple to I am blessed now to be able to adopt one, now three children?
Yeah. So we, like I said, we tried to have kids naturally, and it, we found ourselves at the crossroad of in vitro fertilization or adoption or nothing. That was kind of where we were at. And not having kids was not an option. I just had a deep desire in my heart to be a mom. I knew that was something I really wanted. And in vitro fertilization didn't feel like an option for us either. Infertility and all of the things that get you from infertility to being a parent is a very personal journey for everybody. Everyone has, there's a lot of layers to it. And so for us, I'm real open about it, but IVF financially wasn't an option for us. And then at the time, I had gone through about 6 months of investigating, exploratory, figuring out what's wrong with my body and why I couldn't have kids. It wasn't a real obvious reason. And it's still, it's an unknown reason. I just can't. But in those 6 months, it's incredibly invasive. It's very emotional. And I just thought, I don't know that I emotionally could handle in vitro fertilization, because it's no joke. It's a lot of, it's invasive. It's incredibly invasive and personal. So the next best option for us was adoption. And that felt like a great option. Because we also knew that the end goal was to be parents. It wasn't to have a child who looked like us or who shared our genes. That doesn't feel super important to my husband or me. And so we started off down that path.
Oh, what a beautiful story. Well, you share in your book, our motherhood, our very womanhood, does not exist in the functions of our soul and the depths of our hearts. Motherhood is a holy, brave, sacred role, sometimes attached to one's womb, but always attached to one's heart and soul.
Yeah. I definitely feel like in my journey through infertility and women I know who are going through it, there is a piece of you that's like, this is what my body is made to do, right? To recreate, to have a baby, to grow a child inside my womb. And where's my womanhood if I can't do this thing that my body is supposed to do? That there's a brokenness in that. And there is. Infertility is brokenness. And infertility is a piece of physical brokenness within your body, and then there's the emotional and the heartbreak that happens as well. But that motherhood has nothing to do with that. It's everything to do with your heart and everything to do with choosing to step into it. You know, you're a mom if you choose to step into it, and you can find women who are single, who never had kids, but they have a niece or a nephew, or they're a grandparent who have taken on the role of mother. And that's sacred and important. And their motherhood and my motherhood is not any less because we didn't have a child naturally. And it's just important for women to know that.
And a conversation that needs to happen more often.
Yes.
We're not hearing this. And I believe that there are a lot of women that are suffering in silence.
Yeah.
And there's so much hurt out there. And hurt can't be healed until it's recognized. Thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing your story.
Oh yeah, of course. And it is, there's so many unknowns, and it's, infertility really is one of those things that I always say you can't know what you don't know. And people come in trying very gently and well-meaning to give advice or to be comforting. And I know in my infertility journey, even when people would say, well, I'm praying for you, I got to a point where I'm like, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, this is not helpful. You know, I'm not going on a special diet, and I'm not going on vacation to relax, or someone had said, buy a new wardrobe, you'll get pregnant. It's like, this is silly. This is silliness, friends. And it's not helpful. And I tried this food and I tried this doctor, and you know, you get to a point where you've done everything under the sun and you're still not pregnant. And so I feel like if you've been through an infertility journey, it can be really important to speak up about that, because it takes one to know one, right? Like, there's a tender place in my heart for women who are going through that or who have had a miscarriage. And prior to that journey, I just didn't know. And so it's great to share your story and to be a source of comfort and hope for others.
Well, I love that you are that source for many women out there, and you being able to share so openly, because there's still hurt. I would think right. That even with it going through, you've probably had to deal with bouts of guilt and frustration, even maybe to the point of bitterness.
Oh yeah. There was a point in my journey, and it was actually when we were pursuing adoption, we had said yes to adoption. We had said yes to a child with Down syndrome, which we can get to that part of the journey. Our oldest daughter has Down syndrome. And then she had all these health issues that we found out about. And I was so angry at God. I was so angry at, like, why me? And then in the meantime, everyone around me was pregnant. I mean, there was I remember so clearly in church one day, the pastor joking, like, there must be something in the water, because it was just all these pregnant women. And I just like wept and left the room. I was like, and you know, he wasn't trying to hurt me, obviously. And the women around me who are pregnant, they're not trying to hurt me. And yes, they should get pregnant. But it was, yeah, everyone was pregnant around me. And it was just brutal. It was really hard. So there was a lot of bitterness and a lot of comparison and a lot of why me. Yeah.
Well, obviously you've come over that to the other side, praise the Lord.
Yeah.
Now you have an absolutely beautiful family, which I can't wait to get into that story. But one thing you talk about too in your book is you say society has us responding to how are you with the firm busy. And instead of being busy, you say we need to take a break already, as rest is a posture of the heart.
Yes.
I love that.
Thanks, girl. Yeah, it's taken me some time to learn it, and I'm still have to relearn it over and over, how to rest and how to let the posture of my heart be one that's restful. I think then it's then we can receive from God. I think we can receive from others, and then we can more easily give when we're in that space of a posture of rest.
Did you ever find rest after the infertility, moving into adoption? Did you find a place of just comfort of going, okay, I'm just done, Lord, whatever happens, you take the wheel?
You know, it's actually taken me some years to get there and to get through parenthood. That part of my life, I think part of it was I was really young. We started the adoption process when I was 25, maybe 26. So that's pretty young still. And then there was just a lot coming at us at the same time. So we had gone through the infertility, and then it was all the health issues that our daughter who we're going to adopt was going to have, or all the things with adoption. And then I was just thrown into motherhood with a medically fragile child. And so I really didn't start thinking about my need for rest until my 30s, until I was already three kids in. And at that point in life, I think it had become a habit to be really busy and to feel overwhelmed, and just getting to a point of recognizing like, okay, something's got to give here, because I'm not healthy, and therefore I'm not going to be a great mom, and I'm not going to be a great friend. And that we live in this society, I think now more than ever, where self-care is a real buzzword. And I think for moms, I started finding for myself that the idea of self-care felt like another to-do on my list, and it felt burdensome, you know, like I don't have time for self-care, and I'm now feeling guilty because you're doing self-care, but I can't do self-care. And then it just became this cycle, and that's, you know, I'm working all that stuff out in my mind and my heart and soul. But then I had to stop and recognize that, oh, it really is, like I say in the book, a posture of the heart. It is saying, okay, I need to take a breath right now. And for some mamas, that means I'm going to go to bed on time tonight. You know, like I'm going to turn my TV off. I'm going to get in bed and turn my light off. For someone else, it might mean I'm going to wake up 30 minutes early before my kids get up. That was never an option for me because they were up so early. Or it means I'm going to go in the bathroom. I'm going to put a Netflix on for my kids and go in the bathroom and lock the door and take a breath for 10 minutes, you know, or whatever. And for some of us, it means that we can go to a yoga class for an hour, or we can have dinner with our friends, or we can get our nails done, or we can get a massage. But I think that self-care is only available to a few privileged people. But having rest and having the posture of your heart be one of rest is available to everybody.
Well put. Well put. I love it. Well, you also say in your book, talking about raising children here, because we're talking motherhood. When we raise our children in turn raise us. And you wrote, I get to raise kids who embrace the uniqueness of who God has made them to be, teaching them to avoid all of the molds that pressure them to fit in.
Yes.
Boy, yes, do we that fitting in. Yes, you did. And I love it. I love your boldness there.
But
you know, what is it with that? I mean, we've got a lot of craziness right now. And craziness isn't even a good word. It's more like chaos.
Yeah.
Happening.
Everywhere. It's happening everywhere. Something that's so incredible, that's been a real gift to be the parent to kids who have Down syndrome. So my oldest and my youngest have Down syndrome. My oldest is 11. And when she shows up in a space, she shows up as she is. That is how she knows to show up. And there aren't the filters that other 11-year-old girls have when they step into a room or into a play date, into a classroom. Mason shows up as Mason. And it doesn't, kind of with disregard to the fact that the systems in place don't really work for her. She's just like, here I am. And so what's been so refreshing for me, as her mom, but as a human, is learning that, right? Like learning that, oh, there's all these pressures around us constantly pushing on us to say, this is the best way to behave in a store, like simple like that. Or this is the best way to behave when you go to this place, or this is the best way to respond in this situation. Or, you know, all these like societal norms that have been put upon us that I easily fit into. So I've always done that. And then Mason's like, oh, that's not what I do, you know, and shows up fully as who she is, embracing who she is. And there was a good part of raising her where I felt like a little bit of like my shoulders are up and tense when we step into a public space, because I'm not sure first how she's going to respond to people, but then I don't know how they're going to respond to her. And having to really learn how to let that go and to enjoy who she is and to get to step into moments that are teachable for people around her who don't know how to yet enjoy who she is, because they don't know, because it's uncomfortable and they've never been exposed to it. So I feel like I'm going on a tangent here. If I'm sticking to your question,
you're doing great. Awesome. Just keep going, girl.
So it's, I mean, for example, Mason loves to ask people their names. And I think we've been taught that there's a time and place and a way to do that. But she just wants to know anyone's name anytime. So we'll be in a parking lot and we're getting out of our car and, you know, down the way they're getting out of their car and she'll be like, hey, what's your name? And it's like, oh, Mace, that's actually not a great time to ask someone their name, you know, and we'll practice that. But then I also am like, why not? Why is that not a great time to ask someone their name? Is that harming Mason? Is that harming that person? No. Great, babe. Go ask them their name. That's awesome, you know? I used to get real tense, like, how is she going to respond? And now I just watch it unfold and embrace it and see what beauty there is there. And I learn so much from her constantly. And then it also offers this freedom to me to like step into spaces and just arrive there. This is who I am, you know, and this is who God made me to be. And I'm constantly trying to be the best version of myself as I am teaching my kids to be, right? It's not like Mason gets to step into the park and just like, I don't know, start spitting at people, which she doesn't do. But, you know, there are limitations and we have to navigate that. But I think we need to be careful to not let the molds society has created around us and our kids set those limitations, right? Like that we need to say we need to embrace who our kids fully are, even if they're totally different from everybody else.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of kind of in the olden days, and I'm talking olden days because I'm old already, but going back in time, the etiquette classes, right?
Sure.
I never was brought up with etiquette classes. Just want to say that. So I have no idea. I may decide to spit on you because I'm mad at you, but I'm not saying I'm going to. But the whole idea is that we have these expectations that are set, and sometimes these expectations actually become boundaries and they limit us as to who God created us to be. And mm-hmm. So for Mason to be able to show up fully present, to have, I mean, I just know we have, as I mentioned to you earlier, Down syndrome cousin in my family. Mm-hmm. He is such a blessing. There is joy throughout every inch of his body and in his heart that you can't help but smile. I mean, you just can't help it. And there's no boundaries to them. Now, I know, obviously, we need to have safety boundaries and things like that.
Right.
But when we look at how we limit ourselves to our personal development, how we're to interact with people, I believe that we put limitations then on God.
Totally. And what is beautiful, I think, about a lot of people with Down syndrome, and just, you know, just for the audience listening, people with Down syndrome are all their own individuals. There are similar characteristics, but we always need to be careful not to group them together as a whole because, you know, my daughter Mason, who has Down syndrome, my son August are very different people, as is everybody with Down syndrome. However, there is this commonality of a lack of inhibition. And that's what I appreciate so much in Mason, that she's so uninhibited. And I watch her, like if there's live music somewhere and she's the first person up there dancing and you look around, you're like, everyone in here wishes they were dancing. And we're so worried about what other people think. And then, yeah, it totally inhibits our relationship with God, I think. Like, we're just so concerned about ourselves that it stops us from showing up fully as who we are and understanding who it is God made us to be.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Well, you say that Jesus was a mold breaker. In what way?
Oh my gosh. I feel like open the Bible, take a glance.
In the beginning,
Yes. Jesus showed up to the scene breaking all of the molds. Like that's just what he did. It was constant. I mean, the so much conflict in his ministry that you see in the Gospels is with the Pharisees, with the lawmakers, with the law abiders, right? Like there's just conflict with those people groups. And the people groups who are in the fringes, who are marginalized, who are cast aside, who are looked at as less than, are the people groups that he's finding more harmony with because they're not fighting against who Jesus is because he's embracing who they are. And so you look at, I mean, even the way that Jesus interacted with women, like at the time, the way that he interacted with women was totally taboo. He never looked at women or treated women as second class ever. And that was radical. And the fact that he interacted with lepers, I mean, it's just, you look at the stories of Jesus interacting with humanity while he's alive on earth, and everything he's doing is countercultural. And it's incredible. It's incredible. And so then you're like, okay, if we're called to be like Jesus and live lives like Jesus, then why are we striving to be the rule follower Pharisees that we see who are constant in conflict because they were so obsessed with following the rules and making it all right? You know, like, why are we not drawn towards the margins and those who are marginalized? Because Jesus, that's where Jesus is. You know, that's where Jesus is hanging out.
Well, Mason is definitely walking like Jesus did.
Seriously.
I love that. And the stories, I mean, you guys are going to have to pick up your own copy of Scoot Over and Make Some Room, Creating a Space Where Everyone Belongs. And can I just say this, Heather? I love this orange couch.
Isn't that fun?
It is so much fun. I was like, well, number one, where was it? And is it yours? I have to ask. Was this your couch?
No, it is not. So we had a vision for the photo shoot. And we are like searching for couches, and we're on a budget, so we're not buying a couch. And we have a blue couch. Like worst case scenario, we use our couch. And then our friends own a little shop in the city we live in called Redlands, a little shop called Seed. Shout out to Seed. They're adorable. And we were visiting them for some reason, and in their back warehouse room was this orange couch. This was the day before the photo shoot. And we're like, oh my gosh, can we use the orange couch? And it's kind of become a theme within all our, like all the marketing material and everything. So it was fun.
Well, I think it's awesome. In fact, my son saw it and his favorite color is orange. And it's really hard to find orange things. He's like, Mom, I need to know where they got that couch. But as you can tell, I tried to go kind of with the theme too.
I love that. I love all your little tabs there. But it's a super old couch. So I don't know where you can get it.
Well, it's definitely a trendy color, but it just goes all to the point where you're breaking the mold. And I think a lot of us, we need to take that into our own life. If you are in search for growth, whether you're spiritual or not, we've got to start breaking the molds and stop trying to make ourselves fit into something. And I love how you share it within your book.
Yeah, it's great. And what's been such a gift, I mean, there's been so many gifts in raising my kids, but the fact that they're doing that without realizing it, and how it made me have to do it for them and for myself. And it's just such a grace to get to be their mom and to get to learn that lesson, like to be forced into that lesson, because a lot of us are just going to live our sweet little easy lives, our comfortable lives, and never have the opportunity to have to break a mold. You know, like it's such a gift to get to do that.
Mm-hmm. It is a gift. And we get very complacent, I believe, Heather.
Yes.
And we want the easy road because we think mm-hmm. we've already had it hard. So if we've already had it hard, wherever we've come from to get to a certain status, whatever that status is of success that you're searching for, then you get complacent. You're like, I don't want to have to work any harder. I don't want to have to go above and beyond. And so here is where I sit on my comfy couch.
Yeah. And that society has taught us that's what we're striving for. Like your goal is happiness and ease and success. And those aren't bad things. But if that's happening around you and that's all that's happening around you and everyone around you is those things, then you're missing out on a huge part of life. And I would wager to say that you're probably miserable. You know, like you even you look at media out there, like fictitious shows that are talking about people who are wealthy and successful and made it, right? Like you've made it and everyone's miserable. So I think we're missing out. You know, I think that there's this, I know there's this whole group of people And they've usually been marginalized because they're the smaller people group and they're different. And there's so much value and worth and life to be found in those communities.
Amen. Preach it, sister. Well, in your book, you talk about the sriracha and the marmalade. And I already alluded that we are the sriracha mamas. And I'm sure people are like, what the heck? You know, hot and spicy. I could just say, I mean, we'd probably make a great team.
I think so.
Could you add a little context to that for us?
I will. Yes. So I do believe that for most parents and moms, there's two categories. And you are either a sriracha mama, a spicy mama, or a marmalade mama, a sweet mama. And I have friends who are both, and I know where I lie. Most moms are like, instantly, that's who I am, right? And I am a sriracha mom. But I have these really incredible friends who are just through and through the sweetest, meekest, incredible moms. And I watch how they parent, and I think I could never do that. And that's okay, right? And I think they watch how I parent and think, oh, that's not how I do it. And I think that there's a good, what we have to learn from each other and why it's important to be around people who parent differently than we do, is that there's a sense of marrying the two. And so when you can figure out if you're a spicy mama, if you're that sriracha mama, and if you can learn from your marmalade mamas on how to approach a situation, maybe with a little more sweetness or by holding your tongue, or with some more gentleness. And then as a marmalade mama, watching your sriracha mamas and being like, okay, this is out of my comfort zone, but I'm going to need to show up. I'm going to need to speak up. I'm going to need to stand up. And just how much we have to learn from each other with the way that we parent and the way that we step into our motherhood.
Well, I love it. I think I'm going to just call myself a sriracha mama.
Get it, girl.
You know, it just
maybe we'll make
good.
A t-shirt. We'll make some t-shirts.
There you go. You should do that for the lucky few, of course.
Yes.
I love it. Well, as you mentioned earlier, two of your beautiful children have Down syndrome. What do you want people to know about them?
Oh, gosh. I mean, about my kids specifically, that they're magic, that they're incredible, and they show up every day in this world that still doesn't see their total value and worth, and they just keep showing up, and we have so much to learn from them, and that they should be welcome in every space that we are in, and not just welcome, but invited into every space that we are in. And if you are in spaces without someone with Down syndrome, which is more people than not, then it's time to get into other spaces or to figure out where people are and make sure that they're in your spaces as well. It's really important. And just that people with Down syndrome as a whole, and I already said this, you know, they're all their own individuals with their own unique sets of talents and gifts and needs. And they have incredible, they just have amazing things to offer the world. And we need to make space for them to come as they are, not with better speech, not with more appropriate behavior, not with a different skill set, but exactly as they are to be in this world fully and fully embraced and included. And so that means our churches, it means our schools, it means our workplace, it means our homes. It's so many different things in it. And it's going to take us, the rest of us, shifting the way that we do life. You know, like that's this whole idea. It takes us scooting over and saying, hey, you with Down syndrome, exactly as you are, I want you here in this space because I know you have a lot to offer me, not because I'm a hero, right? Who has something to offer you. So it's that shifting of our posture and how we approach this community. If you have a loved one with Down syndrome, you truly are very lucky. And it's not to say that it's not hard, right? I mean, you have a cousin and you've watched his parents and all the different family members. There are struggles. Struggles are, it's real, you know? And guess what? That's okay. Like there's struggles for all of us in life. And so it's opportunities to learn and opportunities to grow and opportunities to see humanity for what it, for the fullness that it really is. Yeah.
Well, and talk about growing, you stretched Mason. She very much enjoyed dance. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember, I read your book, but I don't know if this is from my research or your book, or maybe it's a combination thereof.
Yeah.
But would you share the story of her dance and the dance recital?
Yeah, it's a good one, guys. We had this opportunity for her to be in a dance recital. And so I'll rewind a tiny bit. Mason started dancing before she started walking. And she just has music in her soul. And this is also a commonality for people with Down syndrome. A lot of people with Down syndrome love music and love to dance. But she is a dancer and she loves hip hop specifically. And so when she was 8 years old, we enrolled her in a hip hop class. And my research was the closest, most affordable class. That's how that went. I emailed the dance instructor, said, hey, my daughter is 8. She wants to take hip hop. She hasn't done a hip hop class before. She has Down syndrome. So if you have any questions, let me know. And that's how I approach all things. It's not, I don't ask permission. I just say we're coming, but let me know if you have questions or need support. And so she said, great. She's welcome. And I've never worked with a child with Down syndrome before, but she's welcome in any of my classes. So we showed up. She had a great time. Every Tuesday was hip hop. And she woke up every morning like, what's today? What's today? And she just loves hip hop. It's her favorite. And so she lived for her Tuesday hip hop class. And then recital season came. And the studio we were at is an incredible, it's a really good studio. And we're just outside of LA. And it was no joke. I'm like, oh, this is Dance Mom's world. Like, this is intense. It was intense. And the closer we got to the recital, the more I realized that Mason really was standing out on stage. And it's not that I didn't, that it was, she shouldn't stand out, but I also didn't want her to be the kid with Down syndrome flailing around, you know? And something needed to change and shift for Macy because the way that it was being taught was not working for her. So I talked to the dance studio. We had a month left before recitals, and we both just had this come to Jesus talk about how I should have been more upfront and asking for more and letting our needs be known, and she should have been asking me more questions. And we both apologized for not showing up fully the way that we needed to for Macy, and we switched it up a little bit. And so she started doing private lessons twice a week, and we got all the routine on video. We got all the music. She had a special mark for where her space was going to be for all the formations. They switched formations up so she didn't have to transition very much. Just little tiny tweaks that people weren't really aware of to help her be successful. And because the thing about showing up, people having different abilities and showing up in a space is to treat them, to expect them to respond the same way as everybody else. Equal is not equal. We have to offer support, you know, like there has to be support. So anyways, this is a long story. I'm going to try to speed up.
So there's all good.
So we get the support. And so we get to the rehearsal and there's a tech rehearsal on a Tuesday or something. We go there because with Mason's personality is that she needs to know what to expect. And when she's going into a situation that she's never been in before and she doesn't know what to expect, she'll shut down and it becomes really overwhelming for her. And I knew that could happen. So we go to the tech rehearsal and, you know, it's a big stage, bright lights, loud music. She's got some sensory things that she's always processing through. And she's nervous at first. And then she does her whole routine. It was great. So then 2 days later is the dress rehearsal. So we show up expecting the same thing. And the music starts. And she refuses to go on the stage. And she says, and she stands on the side. They go through the whole routine. It stops. Allison, the head of the dance studio, looks at me and like shrugs her shoulders. Like, what? What are we going to do? I'm like, I don't know what we should do. So she plays the music again. And then Macy refuses. So we walk out from backstage and Allison said, just let me know when she's ready. I just really want her to do this for her. Like, I want Macy this for Mason. So we go outside and Mason's like, I can't do it. It's too hard. I don't know what to do. It's too hard. And I'm like, Macy, you just did this. You know your dance. You can do it. It's not scary. You can do it. Like, no, no, no. So we're about to leave, but I knew that if we left, if she didn't dance successfully at the dress rehearsal, she wasn't going to dance successfully at the recital. And we had 20 people coming. and so I knew it wasn't about that, right? Like if Mason didn't dance, she was going to know that that wasn't going to change anything, how people felt. Like we were all so proud of her to get to that point, but I knew she needed to do it for herself. And so we're getting ready to leave and she's like, okay, and there's a lot of details here I'm skipping over, but she says, okay, Mom, I'm ready to dance. I'm ready to go up. I'm like, all right, girlfriend, and like seize the moment, you know? It's like grab her hand and we run backstage and she goes up to Allison, the head of the studio, who's busy with lights and can't and all the things for the other routines. And probably 5 or 6 routines have passed, maybe more. And she says, Allison, I'm ready to dance. And without missing a beat, Allison says, okay, and says to the people doing the lights, we're gonna pull after this routine, we're gonna pull up the music and the lighting for Uptown Funk, which was the song she danced to. Bruno Mars. And then she says, get all of the girls for the Uptown Funk routine. And it just so happened that all of those little girls were also in a ballet class. And they were on deck. And they were next. So backstage are all these little girls in full tutus, cream tutus, black velvet, like vest things, full length gloves, about to do their ballet routine. And there's Mason in her drop crotch pants and her crop top, her red crop top with a little sports bra. And they hear Allison and they're like, what? We're going to dance that again? Like, we're in our ballet costumes. And Allison turns and says, you know what? You can absolutely dance to Uptown Funk in your ballet costumes. No one has to do this, but I expect you to because we are a team. And one little girl raises her hand and she says, I want to dance with Mason. I've told this story 100 times. I start to cry. And then all the little girls say, I want to dance with Mason. And then the music comes on and Macy goes out and she gets in her spot. And Allison says, you get out in the audience and you watch. So I run out to the audience and the curtain goes up and the music starts. And there she is. And it was just this glimpse of heaven on earth, like a moment that was holy, where there's all these little girls in their full length tutus and their gloves. And then Mason in her red crop top and her big pants dancing to Uptown Funk for the third time that night. And it took hundreds of people, literally, adjusting and scooting and moving over for that moment to happen. And it was magical. It was magical. And we ran off stage and she's jumping up and down saying, I did it, mommy, I did it. And everyone who was able to witness all that happening was changed. And two nights later for the actual recital, she went out on stage and she slayed it. And everyone backstage stopped what they were doing. And I'm standing backstage to the side, just surrounded by like sequins and tulle and feathers and everyone jumping up and down and cheering, and she slayed it. And just what it takes, it just takes everybody adjusting a little bit for her to be successful. And it's not too much to ask 100 people to adjust a little bit for one person, you know? And when we do that, we have an opportunity to witness the holy right in front of our faces. So it was incredible.
Oh, what a beautiful moment for a mom. And you guys are going to read more beautiful moments in her brand new book, Scoot Over and Make Some Room, Creating a Space Where Everyone Belongs. Well, Heather, I got to ask you a basic question. How has motherhood changed you?
Oh my gosh. How is that basic? Just kidding. It's changed me in all of the best ways. And it took a long time, but it's made me it's given me such a fuller understanding of what it means to be human. And I think it's because I'm raising my kids specifically. And I thought being human was one way, and to see the fullness of humanity and to see the fullness of God within that humanity, that's come from my motherhood.
Oh, that is gorgeous. Well, you also have a third child that we have yet to mention, a beautiful daughter, truly. And she looks nothing like you. Now, I say this with great respect. She is of a different race and a different ethnicity. She's African-American and Guatemalan. She is absolutely gorgeous. You guys will gosh, she is. Oh, yes, she is. How has race impacted your family?
So much, so much so. When I first decided to become a mom and we brought Mason home, diversity has always been important to me. And I grew up in a very small town that was predominantly white. I mean, at my high school, it was like there were like the token black kids, or like two kids who were black and a handful of kids who were Hispanic, and everyone else was white. So I grew up in that kind of environment. But then when I went to college, I did a lot of learning on racial issues and racial reconciliation and within the church specifically. And diversity is really important to me. It's always been important to me for some reason. So all of our dolls and books and all the things that we had reflected were diverse. We didn't have just a bunch of white doll. I don't even think we had a white doll. So when Truly came home, when we were adopting her, we had done a lot of learning about being a white family, adopting a child who's African-American or a different ethnicity. And we learned a lot in studying up on that, and then knew that we had to be really intentional, that we weren't going to raise our daughter who's black to be like a white girl. But I'm a white girl, so that's a problem, you know? And so we had to be intentional in the spaces that we were in. And so it changed a lot. It's changed a lot for us. We invested in relationships and created relationships with people of color so that Truly can be around people who look like her. I follow a ton of Instagram accounts from people of color who are advocates and who are doing all the hard work of racial reconciliation. I read books by people of color, watch shows. I mean, I just try to really immerse myself in that space because I can't understand it as a white person. So, but I want to be available to help truly navigate life as a person of color. And it's a lot. It's a lot. We have a long, long way to go. There is incredible racial distrust in the United States and in the world. And there's a lot happening right now politically. So we live in a time that is it's timely to be aware of the privileges that our skin color offers us or the disadvantages based solely on skin color because the system's in place. So truly has helped to push us into that space where we're learning and listening and learning and listening and trying to show up and be aware of our blind spots. It's a big conversation. It's a big one.
It's a huge conversation. And I love how you put it. It's our blind spots. Think about driving a car. We all have, you know, the blind spots, the A pillars, you know, that get in our way. And if you guys don't know what the A pillar is, it's the ones in the front that hold the windshield up. It's your main blind spots looking forward, let alone the blind spots looking behind. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, I mean, we talked about infertility earlier. Now we've got diversity issues. Has Truly ever come up to you and said, "Mommy, why don't I look like you?"
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, starting from a super young age, being aware that her skin is darker and her hair is curly and a different texture than our hair. And she's been aware of that from the very beginning. And so it's been really important to us that we don't shy away from those conversations, that we address her questions and her curiosities, and that we continue to try to surround ourselves with diversity. But the reality is, when we're looking at molds and we're looking at systems, we live in a world, there are systems in place that benefit me because I'm white and disadvantage her because she's a person of color. And a lot of people who are white can't see that, you know, like there's still those blinders. And so there's some admitting that needs to take place. There's a lot of learning and listening that needs to take place. And those things are happening because my daughter lives in this world, you know, and like they're happening with us and my husband because she's navigating these systems and navigating this world that is going to, and already does, treat her differently because of the color of her skin. So they're really hard conversations. They're really heavy. And we hold it and we'll continue to hold it and do the best that we can and continue to listen and learn and step into the places that we need to for her. Yeah.
Well, the ones who are listening and watching, what can we do to scoot over and make some room?
I think that one of the first things to do is to notice who's around you, or rather who's missing. Look around. Who's missing? Who's missing in your spaces? Do you have anyone in your spaces who is different than you in the way that they look, in their abilities, in the way that they vote, and in the way that they worship? You know, like who's around you? And that's really step one. And if people are missing, then it's time to get into other spaces. Proximity and relationship are really important. So where are people who are different? And then showing up to those places. And it's hard. It's hard work. And the unknown is always a tricky place to navigate. But it's going to be unknown until we step into it and make it known. And there's like that space there where it feels like there's tension. And we've got to step into the tension. We've got to sit in the tension, and we got to let that change who we are. And then depending on where you are, real practical things. Like if you've got school-aged kids, then chances are you have kids at your school who have a different ability. So where are they? Are they segregated in a separate classroom? And if so, talk to your school board about that. Talk to the teacher, talk to the principal, like express that you know your child's education will be better if they're learning alongside someone who's different than them and you'd like to see more inclusive practices on campus. I mean, that's like a practical major thing that you can do, you know? Teach your kids how to interact with people who are different, how to ask questions respectfully. And then I think it's important to recognize who you're learning from. So what books are you reading? Who are you following on social media? Because those are really easily accessible tools that everybody has right now. You know, like if you live in a predominantly white space and you're like, I don't know how to be around people who are different ethnicity than me, well, go to your library and read those books and learn from their perspectives. You know, like follow them on Instagram, follow them on Facebook. Those are just like simple, practical things that you can do to scoot over, make some room for other people.
Oh, I love that. So what does a typical day look like for Sriracha Mama Heather?
Let's see. So we're in Hawaii right now. We are in non-typical day mode.
I love that.
It looks like a pretty normal day of a mother of three. And so it's getting up in the morning and getting ready for school, which is a challenge. But I've heard, and I used to, like with our daughter Mason, who has Down syndrome mostly, but a lot of people who have kids without Down syndrome have a hard time getting their child ready for school. So I think this is a normal thing. And then I'm self-employed, so I work from home. So it's back to the house. And if I can squeeze a yoga class in, then it's been a great day. and it's doing the things that we do, grocery shopping and making food and dance classes and gymnastics, spending time with friends, getting homework done, writing. I travel. So when it's travel season and speaker season, then it's less consistency. I'm gone a lot of the weekends. But it's a pretty normal life over in our neck of the woods.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, did you ever imagine that you would be the Sriracha Mama and advocate for your children?
It wasn't in my initial plan. It wasn't. I think that advocacy, the choice of advocacy is a privilege. So if you don't have to be an advocate, then there's some privileges happening in your life. I think people who are on the front lines of advocacy, it's because they've found themselves personally or someone they love needing to be advocated for. And then it's no longer an option. You know, like I don't have the option to not advocate for my kids. I don't have the option to not wake up in the morning and make sure that my kids are stepping into places where they're fully seen as valuable and worthy and that they have access and opportunity like everybody else. So, but it's taken me recognizing that to steward it well. You know, I think people who have a kid with a disability, when they show up in a space, they are advocating. You know, like it's just by being a mom, you're an advocate. And then you can go a step further and you can steward it in a way that you're more intentional in the things you say and do. So we are in a space of being intentional in all the things we say and do, knowing that we have people's ears and that's important for us. And so we will keep shouting their worth as long as people are listening. And even when they stop listening, we will keep shouting.
I love it. Keep shouting it, girl. Keep shouting it. Well, in your journey, what has God revealed to you that has changed the posture of your heart?
I get repetitive here, but it really is to see the full value and worth in all humans. That every human being is an image bearer of God. You know, like when God says in creation that when he created us to bear his image. It's not if you're just a wealthy white American. It's like, oh no, actually the refugees in Iraq are image bearers of God. You know, my kids with Down syndrome are image bearers of God. And so I have the way in which my heart approaches people has changed significantly. And I'm so grateful for that because it allows me opportunity to get to know a more diverse group of people. And I think I see the heart of God more clearly because of that.
And that's so important because for those of us who quote unquote claim that we're Christians, we forget right. that we're supposed to be walking as Jesus walked. Mm-hmm. And we leave so much of intentionality behind. We just go about living our life through habits. There was nothing habitual about Jesus. Right. I mean, he was intentional about absolutely everything that he did. Mm-hmm. And I love in your book and how you share your stories and all throughout your journey so far. I mean, you're still on it. It hasn't ended yet. Praise be to God. You know, God's got a lot right. more things That's in right. store for you, Heather. I just know he does. So we can't take you home yet. But in your walk and your journey up to this point, you just have really wrapped and embraced intentionality. And I think a lot of us, it's not even complacent. We just kind of go through, it's like getting up and brushing our teeth in the morning. It's, yeah. That's how we live, is habitual, and we need to step away from that and really be intentional with every word that we say, every thought that we have, and what we feel within our hearts.
Definitely. And we need to do that if we want to know, if we want to know the fullness of God. Amen. And God's heart. If we want that, then we need to do that. If we want to just cruise on through, you know, and it, there's going to be big voids and emptiness. And but if we want that fullness of life and the fullness of who God is, then yeah, we got to be intentional about it for sure.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the church. Where does the church fit in for advocating for children?
Well, the church should be the first people, the first place for where advocacy is happening for all things, you know, like for humanity, for all the people. And I don't see that happening in the way that it should. And so the church, I think, has a really long way to go. And again, I think in terms of advocating for children and advocating for people with different abilities, if you are in a church body and there's not someone sitting to your right and your left with a different ability, then that's a wake-up call, you know, that it's time, that it was time a long time ago to make your church a space where all people are welcome. And that's going to mean that somebody might respond differently in a worship service. You know, somebody might make noises all the time. So they're sitting in the middle of the sanctuary making noises that while the pastor's preaching when it's normally quiet, you know, like, is your church super quiet? Chances are you're missing out on an entire population of people with different abilities. So the church, it's a hard question to answer, because it's not like, here's steps 1 through 5 to make your church more inclusive. You know what I mean?
Right.
It is that first step is who's missing? Who's missing in your congregation? And then find them. That's the tricky part. Like, how do you find them? And say, what do you need? Like, when we show up at a church and someone says to us, what do you need? What supports do you need so that this is a place where your whole family feels valuable and welcome? And then do those things, you know, like it's like the dance class, the dance recital. They shifted all the things and tweaked it just enough for Macy to be successful. So are we asking 100 or 1,000 people in a church to change something for the one? Yeah, that's what we're doing, you know? And then you get to have that person be in your church because you've made it a place that works for that person. And then you get to know God more fully. So there's a long way to go. People are doing a good job, but we can do better. And now's the time. Now's the time to do that.
Well, more specifically for your children, since you have 2 with Down syndrome, what would you like to see churches have for children and even adults? I mean, they grow up, they become adults with special needs.
I think that there's that idea that's a posture of the heart. So when a person with a different ability comes to your church, are you looking at them and seeing them as an image bearer, somebody with gifts and talents and spiritual gifts to offer and fostering those like you would anybody else, you know? Or is it like, oh, we are so holy and wonderful, we will create a special little place for this poor, poor person. So there's that posture of the heart. And then it is, what do your kids need? So I need my kids to be fully included in a church environment. I don't, for my kids specifically, I don't want them in a separate classroom. I need them to be fully included with support in place. So that might mean an extra adult in the room. That might mean the music's quieter. That might mean a smaller group. That might mean me meeting with all of the teachers to say, hey, let's do this hour-long class on what my kids need and what other kids with disabilities might need. So it's being well-staffed. It's being intentional. It's being making sure that your volunteers and the people who do the children's service and anyone who is in a predominant space within your church are well-versed on what people with different abilities need, and that there's trainings in place and there's support in place, and that there is the overall posture of people with different abilities are welcome here as they are and have so much to offer this body. So let's be learners from them as well.
Amen. Amen. Well, I think they need to get on this orange couch here and start to talk. And y'all are going to pick up your own copy of Scoot Over and Make Some Room, Creating a Space Where Everyone Belongs. I think we could pile up a few more on that couch. What do you
think? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, not my kids. Yeah. We're not having more kids, but everybody else, come. You're invited.
Well, what do you hope your readers will gain when they pick up your book, Heather?
I hope that they'll gain a fuller sense of humanity, a fuller sense of themselves, a fuller sense of who God is, and see that they have opportunities every day to become better people by allowing people who are different than them into their space, by inviting them in. I hope that people close the book and say, okay, I'm ready to do this work because I know I'm going to be a better person for it.
Amen. Well, I know from reading your book, it very much encouraged me personally. I try to be inclusive. I still fall short many days. But, you know, it's a good reminder, and it's also a great inspiration. I think we need mom to moms. We need inspiration from other moms, like you said, the marmalade versus sriracha. I know moms out there are going to want to connect with you. Heather, where can they find you?
So we are theluckyfew.com, and we'll have links to all the different spaces that we're in. And then we spend a lot of time on Instagram. So the Lucky Few Official is our Instagram handle, and you will see us there. We try one picture a day. So that's most likely you'll see us there daily.
I love it. I love it. Well, before I let you go, the series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
Oh gosh, my story has gifted me relationships with people that I never would have been in a relationship with. Yeah, and it's been a gift.
That's beautiful. Well, you're a gift to us. You're an absolute gem, and I am delighted to be able to call you friend and sister in Christ. Heather, I hope to have you back on.
I would love that anytime. Thank you.
Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.